Okay, let's get started. So, welcome everyone to our first guest lecture of the XML course. Something to say about last lecture. We had the slide set with the kind of a case solution when we were discussing about the newspaper digitalizing their contents and how to enable XML and how to use it to in its best form. So those slides are now also out there if you want to have a look and just prepare yourself for the exam. But yeah, today we're going to have Ville Seppänen, a colleague of mine, from the fifth floor to discuss with you about service-oriented architecture, since it's very XML-related subject and a big topic to cover. So enjoy the lecture, and on Tuesday we'll have then a continuation of this visiting lectures with Joni Kettunen, and take the best out of these lectures and try to absorb as much knowledge as you can. And today's lecture will be actually recorded, but I'm not sure about next Tuesday's. I'll try to clarify that still before. But yeah, stage is all yours, Ville.
Thank you. As Henri said, my name is Ville Seppänen, and I also work at the fifth floor. Also, as Henri told you, the topic of the lecture will be service-oriented architecture, especially web services, implementations of service-oriented architecture, and we'll take a look how XML-based languages fit into that picture. I try to keep this short. SOA as such is quite a broad topic. There could be an entire course dedicated for this matter only, but let's take a quick look. Before defining what or describing what service-oriented architecture is about, we'll have a quick history of SOA. It's been as an architectural model now around more than 10 years. It was somewhat overhyped at the early 2000 and something. Lots and lots of books were written about SOA. Lots of new consultants started working on that field, and number of different programming languages are created support for SOA technologies, and it was kind of a honeymoon period for SOA. Then around 2009, people started to noticing that SOA didn't actually deliver what it promised to do, and at that time SOA was even deemed to be dead, for example, by quite a famous lady, Anne Maines, who wrote this interesting article in 2009 about how and why SOA failed. She named the entire SOA as a concept as a failed experiment that was overly complicated, quite expensive to implement, and things like that. I would even recommend for you to read that article. It's quite short and gives a lot of nice perspectives to SOA. I know this is stupid because we haven't yet discussed what SOA is about, but that's how it went. I might ask how many of you are familiar with the SOA or web services for that matter? none of you. Okay. Then, nowadays, even though it was thought that SOA died in 2009 or 2010, it's still around there and actually doing quite well. The difference nowadays is that it's so commonplace that no one really pays too much attention to SOA. For example, I don't know if you have heard this Kansallinen palveluväylä, KAPA. Anyone? None of you. Are you? Okay, so it's the SOA-based implementation for the public IT services. And it's under development now, but the idea is that all the electronic government services, for example, Kela, opintotuki, healthcare services, and things like that, would be and will be implemented as SOA services, and they can be then used through this Kansallinen palveluväylä, national service bus. So SOA is still there, and it's actually doing quite well, but as I said, it's so everyday matter nowadays that we are not talking about SOA as such, even though KAPA stands short for Kansallinen palveluarkkitehtuuri, national service architecture. Okay. So first I will have a couple of slides that discuss the characteristics of service-oriented architecture, what it is about, what its goals are, how it works on an abstract level, and then we will take a look how XML relates to that concept and how web services and service-oriented architecture work on top of XML. So SOA is an architectural concept in software design that emphasizes this idea that IT functionality, applications, information systems should be exposed as services, so that we wouldn't have systems such as Korppi, which is a huge monolith, but instead we would pick up all those interesting pieces of Korppi and then provide them as services that can be used and combined with other, for example, other applications when they are needed. All the blue phrases we will be discussing on the next slides. So that's the purpose of color coding there. Again, SOA services should be something that supports business requirements or users' requirements, functional requirements directly, so they are not that detailed or technical as such. For example, database API, which is usually an application service, it's on a too low and detailed and technical level to be called as a service in a SOA environment. Then, of course, if we have this selection of IT services, which should be possible to use in different environments and for different uses, we need some standards so that those services can talk to each other and can be used in a way that's as easy as possible and make sense in that matter. So to avoid all those technical specifications and details, we need some commonly agreed standards for that. And this is actually where XML comes in. And finally, SOA services try to raise the level of abstraction, as I actually already said, so that the services, IT services or application services would be such that also business people or common users understand what they are about. So this SOA tries to be as little IT oriented as possible and follow the needs of the business or operations of an organization using the SOA. Okay, so the architectural concept was mentioned. This means that SOA is a description how to see software architecture, which on the other hand describes how the bits and pieces of a software system fit together and work together. But service-oriented architecture as such is not an architecture, but rather it's an idea about how to implement different software architectures. Therefore, if we are talking about SOA, we aren't bound to, for example, only web services or XML technologies, but the same service-oriented ideas can be implemented by using lots of different techniques. Currently, the web services technologies, especially SOAP and WSDL, which we will be talking about a bit more later, are the most common model to implement SOAs, but also REST and even older Microsoft's proprietary distributed component object model or even ancient common object request broker architecture CORBA can be used to build SOA solutions. So there are practically three different perspectives to SOA. First, it can be seen as a technical architecture. If you are a software developer, you're probably most familiar with that concept. On the other hand, it has also been called as a step in an evolution of distributed computing. That's just a theoretical point of view, so we're not that interested in that. But most importantly, it's an IT strategy based on the philosophy of sharing IT services with the aim of achieving business agility, so that those IT services could relate to business needs or users' needs. And at some point of time, entire organization could perceive its operations as services. Actually, for example, here at the University of Jyväskylä, there is currently going on a palvelurakenneuudistus, palvelurakenneselvitys, or something like that, service structure reorganizational project. So we not only have IT services, SOA services, but currently entire organizations are looking at their operations, what are the services that we provide to our customers or students or business partners. So SOA fits in that picture quite well, and service orientedness in general. In terms of IT, SOA needs to be technology agnostic, which means that we don't care about what technologies we are using. Traditionally, when, for example, information systems have been integrated together, or if we have been wanting that one information system is able to communicate with another information system, we have needed some kind of standards to standardize the communication, standardize the data transfer models, and things like that. And in practice, it works quite fine, but nowadays in 2015, there are too many standards to cope with. We have standards, but as there are plenty of those, we don't know to which standards we should stick to. So there are different programming languages, different conventions to develop software programs, different data models, structures, different data syntaxes, semantics, different development environments, operating systems, different technologies, and things like that. And what is nice with XML is that it pretty much runs everywhere. And this has been one of the driving ideas of web services technologies that I use with SOA implementations, that you can use web services technologies practically anywhere. And I think currently there are not many programming languages that wouldn't have some kind of web services technologies implementation. So in that sense, if you want to build SOA services, it doesn't matter if you are writing PHP code or JavaScript or C++ or whatever, because all those different languages support web services technologies. Some nice pictures about this problem of too many standards and how SOA tries to address that problem. So if we have two applications that need to, for example, to be able to exchange data, we are still doing pretty well. They have large common base or shared technology or technology subset, and only differences technology-wise are those that are specific to a certain application. So the communication, establishing the communication channel between two applications that are built on the same technology is quite easy. But in practice, this quite often is the case, and more different technologies we are using to implement information systems or software applications, the smaller the common technology subset grows. So it's quite difficult to find the basis on which we can build, for example, application integrations if we are using a number of different technologies in our application environment, for example. So the idea of SOA is that we standardize the interface, application interface or application programming interface if you are oriented to programming, and leave all the rest as it is. And as I said, web services or SOA implementations are available practically for all the programming languages and all the different technological environments. So we can kind of touch the problem of that tiny common technology subset. So as one of the key principles of SOA, technology agnosticism, this is what it is about. You probably also noticed that I used the term loose coupling at the slides quite many times, and here's the comparison of loosely coupled systems and tightly coupled systems. This goes a bit into detail, so I will go through this quickly. But the tightly coupled systems is those that have been built bottom up to interoperate together or exchange data together. When the programmers are writing the software code, they know where they are going and with which different applications their product need to be able to communicate. There are so many points there that maybe I pick just a couple. Okay, first, the message parts. If you have a tightly coupled systems, the message parts between the applications are hard-coded. You have the, for example, IP address of the system you want to exchange data with, whereas in case of loosely coupled systems, we can route the messages, for example, XML documents that are translated between the systems. We don't need to know what the actual physical location of the another system is, but the message path can be routed as it goes. We just send it out and let the internet or the data transfer infrastructure take care of the rest. Again, technology mix, it's pretty much the same as the technology agnostic approach. We can use any technologies that we like to use in loosely coupled SOA environments, whereas if your systems are tightly coupled together, you need to know what technologies are used and make sure that they are able to communicate together. From the viewpoint of XML, the definition of syntax of different applications or their data models is traditionally taken care of by convention. We need to agree on the data models. We need to know the data models of the information systems that we want to exchange data with a priori, whereas in SOA environments, what we do is that we publish the schema. Is that the right pronunciation? As this is an XML course, I guess you have been talking about data schemas. Am I right?
Yeah, we've been mainly discussing DTD, which is quite a specific case, but we've been slightly discussing the context in those schema.
Okay.
No,
I don't have, but that's okay. And two last ones. What's the objective of tightly coupled systems? Is that they are as efficient as possible, whereas in loosely coupled systems, we want to pursue as broad applicability as possible. So we have these services and we put them out, and let's see what happens. So when we have a service-oriented software architecture, the consequences of what will be or what will come are unexpected. It sounds maybe a bit strange, but for example, in Estonia, they have this X-Road service-oriented IT service architecture implementation for the government services, where they put all the data and all the public services out as a services, and then let the companies and people, citizens, to do what they want with those services, build new composite services, develop new applications based on the software services, has led to that many, not maybe great things have happened, but many interesting things have happened, as people and developers and companies have been able to use those services as they wish. So it's pretty much the same idea as in, is it open data, avoin tieto? You probably haven't been talking about that. Are you familiar with the concept of open data or whatever? So the idea is that especially government organizations, for example, Tilastokeskus, gives their data to the citizens, and citizens can develop new services and do what they want with the data, and this usually leads to that something pretty nice comes up. Usually something better than what, for example, Tilastokeskus could do that with that data by themselves. So those are the broad applicability and unexpected consequences of SOA. We're getting there. This is a bit slow. So servicing SOA is a self-contained unit of software that performs a specific task. Usually a task that is somehow business-driven or user-driven or makes sense to users or business using the IT. That's about it. Most of you have probably heard the term software as a service, platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, which are quite the hyped concepts nowadays. And here's the example of data as a service, how it could work in a SOA environment. So usually we have, in this case, a customer database containing customer data. We have some kind of programming interface connected to our database through which we can access the data, read and write this database. So this is the traditional way to use databases. But it requires that the user of the data must have a direct access to the physical database, through the supported API programming interface. In this example, it's Java Database Connector. If it's so, in this case, you need to be, the technology you are using must support the Java Database connectivity. Then you need to know quite well what's the actual structure of the data in this case. What are the fields of the relational database so you can run the queries against the data. And finally, of course, if we want to allow the access to our databases, we need to be able to control that access, the data security issues, access control in general. So it gets quite complicated easily. In a service-oriented architecture, what we would do is that we define services on top of that data. And hopefully such services, they are usable, they are needed. For example, business cases or user cases. So we could, for example, create services for the contact information of the different customers, purchase history, and what have we. So we don't need to deal with the data itself, but we have services that provide us with the information that we are actually interested about. And in this case, we don't need the direct connection to database. Our technologies doesn't have to support different database connectivity technologies, but we can just invoke those services that we are interested in. So the idea of SOA is that we take a look at our entire IT landscape, see what's in our applications, what our applications are doing, what they are used for, and then define services on top of that mess. And create services that are based on standards that can be used from anywhere and by anyone. So the services in SOA can be traditional application functionality or components, data as in our previous slide, even entire business processes, and even people. There are actually this people for people standard, again, XML-based standard that can wrap people inside XML and invoke people as services in SOA. It sounds strange, but that's true. And when we are there, that our application functionality, processes, and people are all exposed as services, they can be treated like building blocks or Lego blocks, and we can start arranging those blocks, build new kind of functionality, combine different blocks to create something new, and quickly change things, create new compositions, even new business processes or processes in general, working processes, by rearranging and combining those building blocks that are services. And what is funny that because services are so abstract and described by the service interface, which we take a look shortly. It doesn't actually matter how this service itself is implemented, technically implemented. As long as it provides the service that we need, we don't need to care about not the technology that's lying below or how the software or process actually works, as long as it delivers the service that we need. And that's how it goes. We have our IT infrastructure at the bottom, software applications, then the exposed services, which can be combined or called by processes or users using different channels directly. And while developers operate here, the upper levels can create new composite services. That in practice means new applications, new software functionalities by just treating and dealing and combining and recomposing those service components. Okay, so that was the overall idea of service-oriented architecture. Now enters the XML and XML-based implementation model for a service-oriented architecture. This is the famous triangle, how SOA works. We have some kind of server or server side of the IT application solution. It has some kind of service level implementation through which this application delivers its services. We have client side, user, usually another application which has client-side service requesting implementation. In case of web services, it's SOAP implementation. And finally, we probably have some kind of service registry that is kind of a phone book for the services we are providing. We publish our services there in the registry, and the users can browse through this abstract phone book and find what they need. This can take place, for example, in an organization or enterprise, many of which nowadays have their internal service registries. And when new applications, new processes are developed, the developers can browse through the registry and try to find what they are needing. If it's not available there, they can find it somewhere else. As long as it's implemented as a SOA service, that doesn't matter. So now into actual XML. We will be discussing about this WSDL, services definition language, and then the SOAP data transfer protocol for web services. WSDL is used to create an XML document that describes a certain service. The document itself contains the information about the physical location of the service, different methods or operations the service exposes, so in practice what the service can be used for, what does it do, Then the structure of the messages, what kind of data we need to send to that service, and how it responds to our query. And of course, the specific data types that the messages are using. All this in XML. So when we are using these WSDL service descriptions, we don't need to know beforehand what kind of information the service we want to use needs, what kind of information it gives us back, how it works, because all that can be found by reading the WSDL document, XML document. It's human readable as all XML is, but usually it makes more sense if the computer programs read the service description. And as the actual service implementation is wrapped inside this service description, it doesn't matter if the actual implementation changes. So it's kind of a black box kind of thing. We just need to know what it does and need to know how to request it. But we don't need to care about, for example, where it's located or how it's actually doing what it is doing. And as those are WSDL service description documents are published schemas, maybe I might be using the schema word wrongly here, but still we need to just refer to that document and see what's there. For example, what's the physical location of the service? When we are developing our software products, we don't need to input the physical location, for example, the IP address of the service we will be calling into the program code, because it's separated into our service description. So here's the overall structure of the XML document. First, it has the types element, which defines the different data types. Messages, again. Okay, so here's actual example of the WSDL document. Currency converter service. So first we need to define the types that are data types that are used to communicate with this service. As its currency converter, the question we want to send to this service is the from currency and to currency. For example, if we want to translate from US dollars to euros, we would send USD and EUR to the service. And by referring to our service description document, we know that, or if we are developing an application that will be calling this service, our development environment, as soon as we give the IDE, this description document is able to guide us. If we want to call this service, it tells that it provides the method conversion rate or whatever it is, and then what kind of parameters need to be sent and what are the actual data types of those parameters. So this is XML. Looks familiar. And it has own target namespace defined. Yeah, Henry will explain.
One example.
Yeah,
I guess we've been mainly discussing XML as a document format throughout the course, so you are much more aware with DTD and the according XML documents when we give the grammar and constraints for a class of documents. So when we are talking about XML as a data inter-exchange language, just think about this VSWL as a kind of the DTD or a schema for the classes of documents. So just the kind of mental image that you could have in your mind is when thinking about this, think of a kind of a DTD. But again, this has a different type of syntax and ways of defining the constraints, but something for you to maybe keep in mind. But please go ahead. I don't want to interrupt your lecture.
That was good clarification. Have you been talking about what TNS is in this case? No. Target namespace. Okay. Good. Yeah, good. So next comes the message part of the WSDL, which are the actual messages that are exchanged between us and the service we are using. Conversion rate, SOAP in this case, is the request that we send to the service, and conversion rate, SOAP out, is the response. And this or these elements refer to the data types we have defined previously. And again, of course, as a developers, we don't have to write these XML schemas or WSDL documents, but instead, if you have a program code, your development environment can generate these interface descriptions automatically, which is nice. Then we have ports and operations that are the actual operations that services expose. And again, messages that need to be sent to those operations, and the messages they will send back to you when they are requested. Binding is a bit more technical stuff. It does nothing more but actually defines the concrete carrier protocol for the data exchange. In this case, the different possibilities are SOAP or HTTP GET or POST verbs. And why web services are called web services, the reason for that is because they work on web technologies. In practice, most of the data transferring between the services and service requesting parties take place on standard HTTP, which is the web data transfer protocol for HTML documents traditionally. And finally, service element puts this all together, aggregates different ports and operations, and gives them the physical internet address, in this case, webservicex.com/currencyconverter, and all the different ports, in this case, point to the same address. And as we are, when we are using the service, we are referring to this XML document. We don't need to read what's inside it, but instead our development environment will take care of that it is, for example, possible that this currency converter service would move totally different place, new web address, for example. But as it stands there, we don't need to make any changes to our implementation that is calling and using this service. Then the data transfer protocol for web services is SOAP. It's, in my opinion, funny that originally SOAP was an acronym for Simple Object Access Protocol, but then someone noticed that it's not that simple, it's actually pretty complicated, and it has, in many cases, has nothing to do with objects, as in object-oriented programming, for example. So it's better to just call it SOAP and not short for anything that isn't actually true. Again, it's XML-based language to define the how the messages are transferred between the client of the service and the actual service itself. It originates in XML RPC remote procedure call language, again built on XML. And SOAP implementations are, as I said a couple of times already, available for any programming language you can imagine. So no matter if you're developing on C or Java or anything else, it's possible, first of all, to create web services and also to use the web services as a part of your own application or code. And what's nice with SOAP as any XML documents is that you can use practically any carrier protocol. It could be email, it could be even SMS message if you can fit your XML document into how many characters? That is 160. But usually it's HTTP that's carrying SOAP messages between the services, and hence the name web services. And of course, what's nice about HTTP is that usually, for example, if different enterprises or different companies want to exchange data, they both have their own firewalls and tight measures they have taken for the data and information security. And usually HTTP, the common web hypertext transfer protocol, goes through the firewalls because people like to browse web and surf the Facebook. So in this case, I know this is a detail, but it's actually quite a smart idea to use HTTP for this purpose of IT services communication. It opens many holes and avoids many problems in terms of data transfer. And there are quite a lot of different extensions to SOAP. For example, message routing, security concerns, transactions, exception handling, and whatnot. So those quite simple SOAP messages can, or SOAP as a data transfer protocol, can be extended to meet practically any business or military or entertainment use with those extensions. So here's the structure of a simple SOAP message. it's called usually an envelope, which is nice, of course, because it carries some kind of information, XML message, or payload. I might be actually using the XML message term here wrong, as I was doing with the XML document, but anyway. Then, so the envelope wraps the entire SOAP message. Then we have a header, which is optional at the header section or element of a SOAP message. We can define those, all the extensions we like to use. For example, security, if there's some kind of measures taken to ensure that this certain SOAP envelope is transferred securely, or if we want that only the receiver it's aimed for is able to read it, we can do something about that. Then there's the actual payload in the body element and optional fault handling elements. If we want to give some directions what to do if something goes wrong during the data transfer. So back to the client-server side of the things. Both need to have some kind of SOAP implementation, STUP as it's called here. The client first marshals the parameters, which means that the client side of the application reads its own internal data structures and picks up the data that it wants to send to the server or service, serializes that data into the XML SOAP envelope. Then it's transported, usually over the HTTP, and the receiving party or the actual service takes the same steps in reversed order. Then it reads the request, executes the service, inputs those parameters, again wraps the response into the XML envelope and sends it back. So this is RPC, remote procedure call, kind of way of using SOAP. Another option is that we can transfer entire XML documents within a XML SOAP envelope, which gives a lot of different options what to do and what kind of data or information we want to transfer. In this case, of course, we need to be dealing with then document object model, maybe do some XSLT stuff there. Now I'm I'm lost because I'm not as familiar with XML as Henry, but I'm pretty sure this makes some sense at least.
We haven't been discussing DOM during this course because the data intake change is kind of a minimal part of this course, but it's something if you start working with service-oriented architectures in terms of what you need to learn next about XML, I think DOM is the way to go. And of course going deeper into these transformations about this XSLT because we are really scratching the surface only within this course.
Yeah. And of course, it's also possible to use, for example, MIME, MIME, mistähän sen tulikaan? Who's familiar with MIME? MIME. It can be, for example, we can take the binary object, for example, image, then transform it as a MIME message, which is text, then attach that MIME representation of a binary object, for example, an image file or MP3 file, and put that MIME, textual MIME representation of that binary file into an SOAP envelope. So it's possible to also transfer binary data within SOAP envelopes. Okay, a couple of quick examples what this all might mean in practice. Not very practical practice, but simple examples. So this is SOAP UI tool, which is mostly aimed for testing web services. And if you are doing the exercise, it's available, I guess, to do. This, if I remember correctly, is the use that the tool that I suggested you could use to try out some web services and read the XML that goes there and try to understand what's going on. So, and this is pretty much the same as the web services can be used in the development programming environments. But this is just for testing and trying out services, not writing the program code. So we could create a new SOAP project, like so. And if you take the exercise, this is what you're going to do. Give a project name and then enter the WSDL service description document and press OK. That's it. I've done that already, so I have a couple of weather and I guess this was the currency converter. Yes. Click that open, and you can examine, for example, the content of the service description that you have added. And as this is a graphical tool, this is nice because it arranges the parts of the WSDL into logical groups, for example, symbol types. It finds currency, which refers to a symbol type named currency, which is then the, is this enumeration, is it standard XML or is it some kind of thing that these guys have done?
In DTD, something like enumerated types are discussed as well.
Yeah. And the base value is, of course, string here, because this enumerated list contains all the possible currency symbols you can use with this service. So as all this information is inside this service description document, when you are, for example, developing a software application that needs to translate currency from one to another, your programming tool or environment knows all this stuff and it can point you the right direction. What are the possible currencies that can be used here, and if you're trying to make some mistakes, it can correct those mistakes by referring to this document and messages and things like that. Okay. Now to the soap part. Just double click. And according to this WSDL, our tool can create the correct structure for the SOAP envelope that we need to send to the service. Sorry, the previous example was from the currency converter, and now I'm at the weather service, but that's fine. Okay, so this is the temperature or weather service. For example, if you would be creating your own website and would like to have a weather of your hometown there, you could attach this web service to your site, or on the other hand, if you're developing some actual applications that needs to convert currencies or need to be aware of the weather, instead of developing or finding out creating how to get the weather by yourself, you could be using web services for that purpose. Okay, so again, according to our WSDL document for this weather service, we as a service user need to send a city name and a country name to the service. Both of which are defined in the WSDL data types. Both are probably strings. Let's put Helsinki and Finland. So this is what shows here is the actual SOAP message. Very simple XML document or what it is. And now we have inputted the so-called parameters: city name Helsinki, country name Finland, and send this request to the service, and it responds. It returns a SOAP message back to us, which contains the response of the weather service. And if we want to mess around here, create an error on purpose, it didn't work, it still gave us Helsinki. Or maybe I should have stopped. Okay. So, data not found, and program probably crashed. But in the exercise, there was one of the pieces of the assignment was that you should try out some service and try to create error on purpose. The point of that is not to get your SOAP UI crashing, but as you notice in this case, the service just responded data not found, which isn't that nice error message. It would probably have been better if it would have said, for example, that you are missing the city name, please send a city name or something like that, but we'll see. I need to get And I'll just it usually runs fine, but not in this case. And finally, because I'm not a programmer, I will be showing you some PHP code. So this is how we could request the same weather service as we used there with the SOAP UI on our programming environment. So it's quite easy. First we create the client, service client, and if there are some real programmers out there, don't laugh or don't point out any mistakes how I didn't terminate the object after I created or so, whatever you are supposed to do. But in short, if you are interested in a weather in a certain place, all the code we need to write for that are those couple of lines. So we create the service client by giving it the actual WSDL document here. Then as our environment reads that document, it knows what kind of parameters we need to send to that service and what their data type must be. PHP is weakly typed language, so it doesn't really care about if data is string or integer, but that's how it works. So when you would call the service, like so here, using the client object, your environment, by referring to WSDL, knows what operations that service offers. In this case, it's get weather, and it also knows what parameters it must be sent, and what's the their actual data type. All this because of WSDL and XML data type definitions in there. Now should the actual service implementation change, as long as we are referring to that service description file, we don't need to know what's going on there. Of course, if the method name or operation name changes, it might need that we make some minor changes to our code, but there are also advanced environments that can restructurize and rewrite the code and make the changes to that are needed according to the interface or service description. Like so. So here it is. So what we are doing now, we typed in Helsinki and Finland, our client SOAP implementation, which we have been talking about, automatically wraps this data, Helsinki and Finland, into an XML SOAP envelope. And when we submit, it changes it to the service, to the address that can be found at the WSDL document we are referring to in the code. And now this will probably explode or crash or something, but it's doing something. go ahead. Yeah. Like so. Still waiting for my local host. It might be my problem, but anyway, it should work fine, and it returns us the same SOAP envelope as that you saw in the SOAP UI, and then you have that weather information data. You can do whatever you want with it. Just a couple of slides. So what are the advantages of this amazing XML-based web service technologies that you have seen? For the 10th time today, we are independent of programming language, different technology platforms, different data models, and things like that. Open standards that we can use web services anywhere. It doesn't cost us anything. It's free as a technology. Enables easy and inexpensive interoperability and integration over the boundaries of systems and organizations and firewalls because of the HTTP. Can be used to expose existing application functionality as a service, which is I should have put more emphasis on, because the idea is that we take any application we have and then just wrap it inside the WSDL service description, add a couple of lines of new code that does it or creates the server-side SOAP implementation. We don't need to, if we want to expose our IT as a services, we don't need to work that hard. Just wrap the current functionalities inside those XML description documents and create the server-side SOAP implementation, which is usually just a couple of lines of code. And finally, as we have those services hanging out there, they can be combined or composed or orchestrated in any way we want. As an example, we had this currency converter and a weather service. If we would like to create a composite service that multiplies the current weather of Jyväskylä with the conversion rate of USD and Euro, that would be possible. Would it make any sense? Probably not. But as an example of how the services can be combined and composed. I guess we are running out of time, so I'm not going into details of WS People, which is a process orchestration language, again based on XML. And those processes, have you been doing any kind of process modeling or drawing flowcharts or things like that? Some of you have. So using WS People, it's possible to draw process diagrams, which then turn into People process descriptions that can request web services. So in practice, we could create workflows, graphical visual workflows that request any web services we need to use during that process. For example, in e-commerce store, we could craft a process of customer browsing through our products and then submitting an order. And during that workflow or customer shopping experience, we could at some point of the process flow invoke the currency converter and translate or convert the currency to that currency the customer wants to see. And again, by using web services. So this is in practice what the composite services or service aggregations and themes like that means. So we put different services together and define the flow in which order they will be used and create something larger by this means. And again, XML. And some couple of nice extras. This is the Finnish National Service Bus, the kansallinen palveluarkkitehtuuri tai palveluväylä, which is coming. It's been developed, I guess, around the year now. And the idea is that all the public IT services will be provided through that service bus as SOA services. Here's our response. Okay. I was going to say that if this kansallinen palveluväylä works as well as my web service test, we're screwed, but hopefully it's found. So it returned, again, XML document, strange looking. It uses its own tag structure, but it's the location time which you could pick if you're just interested in temperature. You could pick this element here and go on. So here's what's going on in kansallinen palveluväylä. It's only in Finnish, but it's an interesting read. I recommend that you read it. You know what's going on with the public services. Here's really good text, because you probably, or I wasn't able to perfectly open up the idea of what this SOA is about. This is a short and very good text about the ideology and objectives of SOA. And it uses Lego blocks as a metaphor to which web services and SOA services are compared. What are the strengths, what are the weaknesses, what are the possibilities, what are the limitations. It's short text, but gives a profound understanding about the concept if you missed it here. And during the recent years, a lot about RESTful web services has been happening. It's almost taking the place of XML-based, strictly XML-based web services technologies, because it's much lighter, it's much more hip way to implement service application services, interoperable application services that can be used over the HTTP. The entire concept of RESTful web services builds on HTTP verbs, GET, POST, things like that. And it's a nice alternative to somewhat maybe unnecessarily complex web services technologies. So if you're into developing or web developing is development especially, I recommend that you read this excellent Dr. Dobbs article. And that's it. Thank you. Do you have any questions or comments? Not so. Okay. Thank you.
Few ending words still before you go. I mean, I don't keep you for many minutes, but if you still think about this BSW and also SOAP as the kind of a, when you think about XML in a document format, you have the DTD and the according XML documents as a kind of a reference point. But I mean, no matter if you, like later on, if even if you don't become a developer, but some of the basics about service-oriented architectures are extremely good to know, and I'm very happy that Ville could be here today to discuss about it. Since personally, I've been now working 5 years in the university in something like 5 different projects that deal with somehow development of some kind of a services for education or something. And these service-oriented architectures are always present there. And even though if you wouldn't be as a developer, it's very good for you to somehow know later on the basics around this, how these things go. Even if you have to do it from the kind of a management perspective, if you have to put some work efforts into anything, it's very good then to know about what's happening behind and to understand the logic of these loosely coupled services. And this, what I showed you last time about this Open Scout, it's a very, well, it's a good example of a project where service-oriented architectures are very present. And what it also enables, like, us as a project team to do, when we are kind of trying to understand the needs and requirements of teachers, we don't necessarily always have to think about just the user interface, how everything looks like, because we have the services there and we can try out all kinds of different things, like more of a kind of a desktop feel that you have the services there and you play around, or you put it more towards this, like I showed you last time, it's a more traditional kind of a website where you just can browse to learning materials. So it's very easy to do that when you're applying service-oriented architectures. So, yeah, that's what I mainly just wanted to say, that even though if you wouldn't be working as a developer, still if you work in the management or in IS projects later on, these will become very handy to you, I'm sure. And, yeah, next time, Joni Kettunen will be here on Tuesday, and he brings even further perspectives on XML use in his work life. But did you have something?
Yeah, I was just going to continue that. It was there. The services should be business-oriented or user-oriented or teacher-oriented and coarse-grained, so that when the IT guys talk with the teachers, in this case, they could use the same terms, same language, what the teachers need from the IT and not what the IT services or what strange bits and pieces we have there, because the web services make it possible that they are actually business concepts or working concepts of teachers that IT services are exposed in this SOA context.
Okay, any final comments, questions? Okay, that's it. See you next Tuesday.